From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 7th day of May 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, Colin Peterson says, "Whoa, Nelly, these proposed greenhouse gas regs are unfair to ethanol." Only a third of the U.S. livestock farmers have enrolled in the national traceback system, and there's a new deal on U.S. beef exports to Europe. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau on animal care. And at the end of the half hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt. He'll help us take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago, on a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby May wheat at $5.59, a settlement price up 11.25. July at 5.70 and a quarter, 11.5 higher. And September at 5.97 for the soft red, 11.5 cents higher. July hard red winter wheat in Kansas City settled at $6.13 and three quarters of a cent, up 6 3/4. May corn futures, $4.04 and three quarters of a cent, back in Chicago at the CME Group, up 4 cents. July at 4.12, up 4.5. September at 4.20 and a half, up 4.5. And December at 4.31, up 4 1/4. March corn at 4.42 and three quarters, 3.5 cents higher. May soybean futures, $11.19. This is where the red starts, down 16 cents for the day. July at $11.02, 16 lower. August at 10.63, down 14. And September at 10.14, down 9. November beans, $9.72. A settlement price down 6 cents in the January 2010 contract at 975.5, down 6 1/4. May bean meal at 358.70, down 30. July at 341.70, down 330. May oil, 18 lower at 38.47. July at 38.78, down 20. June live cattle futures, $82.25, up 15. August 17.5 higher at 82.52.5. The May feeders at 98.20, up 50 cents. And the May lean hog futures at $59.20, a 50-cent gain on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures, June contract settlement price today at $56.71 a barrel, up 37 cents. July, $58.02, up 43. June ethanol, $1.65 3/10, 3/10 of a cent higher. July at $166.5, up 1 8/10. Natural gas, June contract, $4.16 1/10, 27 4/10 higher. June RBOB gasoline at $1.66.5, up 3 7/10 at the hour. And June futures in the heating oil, that's diesel fuel, $1.47 8/10. That's just about 7/10 higher. June propane, rather July propane futures at 67 8/10, up 1 7/10 on the afternoon. And the gold futures May contract, $915 an ounce, up $4.50. The Dow at 83.87 is just about 124 points lower, and the U.S. dollar at 83.94 is down 0.03 on the afternoon. The CRB index for the day at 239.60 is up 2.12. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like tonight. In northern Illinois, should become partly cloudy. Elsewhere, says our own Mike Sola, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers, some thunderstorms, lows this evening from 46 in northwestern Illinois to 62 in the south tomorrow. In the north, partly sunny in central sections, mostly cloudy, a chance for a shower early, then partial clearing. In the south, cloudy, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, highs tomorrow from 70 in northwestern Illinois to 78 in the southeastern parts of Indiana. A disturbance will bring another chance for thunderstorms to the region on Friday night and Saturday morning. The focus of that rain will be in central and southern sections of the two-state region. Some locations in the south could receive up to 3 inches of rain through the middle of next week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon, and we always talk with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, I was taking a look at the charts, and it seems to me that there are a couple of patterns, at least in the corn, that you have discussed in the past that you might want to continue to talk about. There's some pennant patterns there. What do they mean?
Well, we got a kind of like a triangle formation in the corn contracts that kind of got started developing back in December and January. Those were the two, that was the bottom point, early December, and early January was the high point, and we've been kind of moving our way toward the apex of that triangle through the winter and early spring here. Now, over the last couple days here, this type of price strength that kind of started last week, we're starting to break to the outside of that pennant formation. We haven't really, I don't think, solidified a clear breakout yet, but we're definitely tempting to break out of that formation. We got a couple short-term price objectives to be met. Actually, one of them was met here today on the July contract based up off of a little double bottom formation that we made here a couple weeks ago. We had a 420 objective, and that was today's high in July corn. If you kind of want to use this consolidation phase that we had late last week, early this week, to swing a move off of that 370 bottom in July corn, it kind of puts a 440, 442 upside objective, at least in the short term. I think if that objective is attained, then that kind of tells me that we have made a solid breakout of this pennant formation, and at least the market is geared up technically to move to higher levels. We'll have to see some fundamental verification of that, but at least so far so good here.
And so you're looking for a 30-cent run to confirm an outside, a breakout to the upside. Is
yeah,
that
and we want to see some increasing open interest, and we want to see some increasing volume activity. And I think if we do that, it basically tells us that at least for the time being here, that the Eastern Corn Belt is going to continue to see planting delays, and the market is going to begin to kind of anticipate that we're seeing a downward adjustment in planted acreage expectations.
I suppose that's really the story for the day. The fact of the matter is if you're looking at the technicals, but fundamentally the traders are thinking that there will be fewer acres of corn, or at least less corn there, one of the two, depending on yield or acres and how late they have to wait to get this corn crop in the ground.
And it's real important. Usually there's no magic date, but if there is a magic date, it's kind of like the May 20th date is when the trade a lot of times sizes up new crop prospects. That's when they kind of look around to see how planting went. And at that point in time, probably any time after May 20th, you really increase the chances of losing planted acres if you don't have the whole crop planted. And it's always that last 5% that doesn't get planted. The first 95% usually gets planted. But in 93, where we had excessive moisture in the Western Corn Belt, was one of those years where we didn't get the full 95% planted. So, you know, there's always that concern, and but the corn market is a supply-driven market, and that's what's driving it. It's the expectations or the potential, at least at this point, that we're going to have a smaller supply down the road rather than increasing demand at this point.
Are you a willing seller of old crop on the rallies?
Well, I think, you know, depending upon each individual farmer, you know, they have to take their own individual risk. But, you know, $4 cash corn is a spot to kind of let loose of some corn and then kind of scale up, I guess, from that point to see how things go. We are in a weather market, so if all of a sudden the weather turns real nice and the corn planters start rolling, Some of these higher upside objectives will be postponed for some time, may be for a month or two, could be for 2 or 3 months. We don't know. So you kind of got to take one day at a time in here.
And then, crystal ball, what's your long-term analysis tell you?
I'm kind of friendly. I think there's more retracement rally of the last year's decline kind of in play here over the next 12 months or so. At least I kind of want to be optimistic longer term, looking at the technical and cyclical perspective.
So you're thinking $5?
I could probably be talked into $5 objective at some point in time. I really don't want to use that number yet because I really can't verify that, at least the way I look at the market from a fundamental and technical perspective. But I do kind of like what I see developing in some of the chart formations and longer-term cyclical work.
I was just eyeing up what I thought a third of a retracement might be, and I think that's about right or something in that category. Tell me about the bean market. We had a rough day there.
Yeah, the bean market looks like, I've kind of mentioned the last couple of weeks that I thought at some point in time we were going to maybe see a reversal in the roles, and it kind of became a little more obvious here today. And I think what that market is kind of reflecting is that these planting delays in the East Corn Belt has got to the point where I think not only are we looking for less corn acres, we're looking for increased soybean acres. So the fundamentals might be beginning to tilt more favorable toward corn and less favorable toward soybeans. I think we'll see a first glance at that maybe tomorrow morning with the Infoma economic numbers. They're going to come out with their new planning estimate, and it'll be interesting to see their numbers. It's going to be a surveyed number, so it'll be viewed by the trade as an important survey to kind of give a temperature of what may be happening, since USDA's March 31st estimate.
Yeah, and then tell me about the fundamentals on that side, because there are fewer beans, at least in the world, we think, from South America than there were thought to be, may even just a month ago.
Well, that may be, but we're not going to run out of soybeans. And there's one thing that you got to keep in mind about the soybean complex. Since soybeans, we are no longer the number one producer of soybeans. South America produces a big crop also, and we do have two big crops coming at us per year, so we won't have to wait a full year to get that supply back replenished. And the way the weather pattern is going here, it looks like the U.S. may help in easing some of that supply problems. And I still think the trade is still somewhat skeptical of USDA's original planting numbers, because there's about 4 million acres out there that could come back into production. And, we could have a sizable soybean crop yet before this growing season's over with.
Thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Dave Dickey's here now with the Ag News for the day.
In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says the Obama administration's proposals on greenhouse gas reduction are unfair to the ethanol industry. Peterson says, quote, "You're going to kill off the biofuels industry before it even gets started. You are in bed with the oil industry. I want this message sent back down the street. I will not support any climate change bill. I don't trust anybody anymore." Peterson is the first committee chairman to declare opposition to climate change legislation. USDA says just one-third of U.S. livestock farmers are enrolled in a traceback system aimed at disease control. USDA Chief Veterinarian John Clifford says to be effective, participation must be at least 70%. Critics, including some members of Congress, say the program, which has cost $130 million to date, is not working. USDA says it will tour the country over the next several months to help it answer questions such as whether traceback should be mandatory or voluntary, who should control the data, and who should pay for the program. The Obama administration has accepted a deal from the European Union that allows the U.S. to export more non-hormone-treated beef to the EU in exchange for not imposing new sanctions in legal trade battles over beef. Packers would be allowed to ship an additional 20,000 tons for each of the next 3 years, increasing to 45,000 tons in the fourth year of the agreement. By the end of the four-year period, the U.S. and the EU would have to agree on conditions for further beef trade. Currently, the U.S. is allowed to export 11,500 tons of non-hormone-treated beef to Europe. The overriding question is whether U.S. packers and beef producers will be able to increase production to meet the potential of the duty-free shipments. Beef producers have been reluctant to move away from hormone treatments due to the higher feed costs associated with non-hormone treated beef. And a poll from the Pew Research Center says that public support for free trade agreements with other countries has rebounded in recent months after falling sharply a year ago. 44% of those polled said free trade agreements in general were a good thing, up from 35% in April of 2008, while 35% said that such agreements and policies were bad, down from 48% a year ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. You can hear both of them online, of course, willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus takes up animal care on the farm.
With the challenges America faces today, providing our nation with a safe, healthy, and affordable domestic food supply has never been more important. Today, livestock producers face increasing threats from legislation that fails to utilize the expertise of veterinarians and animal scientists. This could result in higher food costs and lower food safety. The well-being of producers' animals is of primary importance, because producing healthy food for this country requires that livestock producers protect their animals from disease, injury, and their predators. Producers work continually with veterinarians and animal scientists to develop, enhance, and employ reasonable science-based management practices. Quality assurance programs at the national and state levels provide producers with guidelines for the production of safe, wholesome animals, including recommendations on necessary animal handling and facilities. Livestock producers must be allowed to raise livestock in accordance with commonly accepted agricultural practices. Any changes to animal well-being guidelines should be based on scientific data, expert analysis, and economic feasibility. Adding unnecessary costs to livestock production will increase the amount of food imported from places that have an inferior record on food safety and animal well-being. Overzealous standards will increase the price of food, negatively affecting all families trying to make ends meet. Farm Bureau supports the right of livestock producers to raise livestock in accordance with commonly accepted agricultural practices and opposes restrictions on common veterinarian livestock production practices. Legislative, regulatory, and legal attempts by animal rights activists to restrict livestock production are increasing. During the 2008 state legislative sessions and general elections, several states saw animal production-related bills and ballot initiatives. Get the facts on livestock production. Talk with a local livestock producer and learn how he or she cares for the animals. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call at 217-333-0850. Now up next, in an experiment spanning over 20 years, researchers at the University of Illinois have found that largemouth bass just might inherit a trait which makes them more likely to get hooked. I'll have more on this fish story.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This fish story begins in 1975. That's when researchers started working with a population of bass in Ridge Lake. It's an experimental study lake in Fox Ridge State Park in Charleston, Illinois. The fishing there was controlled. Anglers had reserved times to fish, and every fish that was caught was put into a live well on the boat. The fish were measured and tagged to keep track of how many times each fish had been caught. All fish were then released, says ecologist and conservation researcher at the University of Illinois, David Phillip.
And we kept track over 4 years of all of the angling that went on, and we have total records of that, and there were, you know, thousands of captures. When we drained the pond at the end, and some of those fish were caught, one fish was caught three times in the first 2 days, in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the next morning, which was an indication something was going on. We had one fish that was caught 21 times in 1 year. Okay, and when we, many fish were caught multiple times. When we drained the pond, we got 1,700 something fish. 200 of those fish had never been caught in the 4 years that they were there.
This told researchers that something was interesting in the population. Males and females from the group that had never been caught were designated low vulnerability parents. To produce a line of LV offspring, these parents were allowed to spawn with each other in university research ponds. Males and females that had been caught four or more times in the study were designated high vulnerability, or HV, parents, and they were spawned in different ponds to produce a line of HV offspring. The two lines were then marked and raised in common ponds until they were big enough to be fished, says Phillips.
And then we fished them, and they were marked, and we could tell then, so as we started catching them, we could tell what line they were from. We also gave them a mark every time they were captured so that we could keep a record of the number of captures as well. And as it turned out, as we had predicted, if it was a heritable trait, that the offspring of the high vulnerability fish were caught almost twice as often as the ones from the low vulnerability fish.
The selection process was repeated several generations over the course of the 20-year experiment. Why? Well, because fishing has an impact on the wild population of largemouth bass. It's making them harder to catch. Phillip recommends that to preserve bass populations across North America, management agencies need to protect these nesting males during the spawning season. He says there should be no harvesting of bass during the reproductive period. I'm Todd Gleason. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's National Crepe Suzette Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1833, Illinois blacksmith John Deere developed the first cast steel plow. Deere's plow was made of wrought iron and had a steel share that could cut through sticky soil without clogging. Deere's first steel plow sale was to a local farmer named Lewis Crandall. It wasn't long, though, before the plow was in huge demand. By 1855, John Deere's factory was selling over 10,000 steel plows a year. The steel plow made Deere a millionaire. In 1851, John Glory patented an ice-making machine, the first U.S. patent for a mechanical refrigerator. Although the mechanism produced ice in quantities, leakage and irregular performance sometimes impaired its operation. Lori is considered by many the father of refrigeration and air conditioning. And in 1898, Daniel Gerber of baby food fame was born. But it was actually his wife, Dorothy, that was the genius behind prepared baby food. In 1927, she encouraged her husband to hand strain solid food for her 7-month-old daughter, Sally. After several evenings, Dorothy suggested to her husband that the work could easily be accomplished at the Gerber family's Fremont Canning Company. The rest is history. A year later, in 1928, strained peas, prunes, carrots, spinach, and beef vegetable soup were ready for the national market. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media from the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign. On the line with us today for a Thursday to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast is Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, farmers will be awaiting a dry forecast. Can you give it to them?
Partially, and that's certainly an improvement over the last few weeks. We have a couple of days here, or at least the next 24 hours, of showers coming across the northern half of the Midwest Corn Belt. We had some rain last night. Now we've got some thunder showers crossing the Mississippi River in east central Iowa, and that'll move across the northern areas. I don't think they'll be very heavy up there. However, we do have a threat of some severe thunderstorms in southern Illinois this afternoon and evening as a system in northern Missouri moves out to the east. So the general pattern for the week, just to simplify it, is that it looks drier in the northern third of the state, about normal in the central portion and wet in the southern portions of Illinois. The polar front is going to sink southward to the Ohio River Valley on tomorrow night and Saturday. And this will allow a high-pressure system to move over and produce some cool, dry weather. It'll be below normal temperatures, but at least it'll be a little drier. I think we can keep the dry weather going through Wednesday. Then Thursday, the moisture comes back again from the south, and we've got to go through another wet period. In the longer range, the pattern is still the same type of pattern with an unusually strong and southerly displaced polar jet this time of year. And that means wet weather is much more likely than dry weather. But we may get something done this week with just a few days of dry weather, mostly in the northern half of the eastern Corn Belt.
Yeah, tell me a bit more about what it appears to be. Could be some real gully washers in the southern part of Illinois along the Ohio River Valley there.
Yeah, there's going to be a series of storms. This front is going to go stationary down there. So we're going to get one wave after another moving eastward along the front. And it'll come out of Oklahoma and southeastern Kansas across southern Missouri, and then it's going to be right up the Ohio River Valley. And we're going to see that tonight, tomorrow, another one comes along, and on Sunday as well we've got some more, except it'll sag southward into Arkansas, I think, and maybe dry out in the north. But a lot of rain, a lot of wet weather down there.
As you take a look around the globe, what else do you find?
Well, actually, weather conditions are fairly favorable in most of the major spring and summer crop areas. It's a little dry in the former Soviet Union western portions, and that may be a problem for maturing wheat up in there. It's fine in Australia, where they're getting good harvest weather in western and northern, and they're getting good topsoil moisture added now for the upcoming winter grain crop there, so Australia looks better. Once again, in South America, Brazil is okay, but there goes Argentina again, going dry as more drought hits that state. They just can't buy a significant period of moisture there, and that's going to stall early winter wheat planting down there, although it helps the harvesting of the maturing summer crops.
Pete, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.